Blog Talk Radio.
Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenk, and Joan Adams and I host this show. We have a change of plans this evening. We will be doing an experiment, and I will be reading a few prayers from the Daily Prayer for Healing blog, and we will be discussing them. Joining me now is Joan Adams.
And good afternoon, Kate.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm great. I'm great. This is going to be interesting.
Well, we were just together about a half hour ago.
Indeed, we were. But we have a new schedule.
Yes. Yes, we do. We have a half hour program from 5 to 5:30, blog talk radio show, Giant Squid Open Mic. We have returned to the air after about a longer than a month respite. And that went very well. That was fun.
Yes, it was. It was a nice kickoff.
Yes, it really was. And now we have somebody on the other line. Maybe we should, could that be your sister?
It could be.
901 area code?
No.
I'm just calling into the show.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
How are you? Who is this?
Hi, this is Lanice.
Hi, so glad that you could join us.
Thank you.
What part of the program, what part of the country are you living in?
I'm in Memphis, Tennessee, the south part.
Ah, Memphis is beautiful.
Thank you, it is lovely.
Yes, it is. It's a beautiful city. I had a dear friend that lived there for a while. She's not living anymore, but very dear friend, and she did love her Memphis.
I bet it's beautiful. What is the temperature there now?
It's like in the 20s. It's very cold.
Unusual, I believe, for that part of the country.
Yeah, yes, that's what I was thinking when you said that. It is. I mean, it's cold for real.
Yeah. You have snow? You don't have snow yet.
We're anticipating snow. It's in the forecast, I think, for today or tomorrow.
And we're looking for some Thursday or Friday, and I'm in South Carolina, so.
Okay.
Well, the South may get hit. They say it will get us if the mountains doesn't stop it. So we'll see what happens. You
right.
Folks can have it all in Memphis. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Those southern storms really hit us pretty hard. When we always get them. And we always get, a significant snowfall, really.
Yeah, you do. For sure you do. We were up that way one year for, I know I've told you this, Kate, but we were up there for Kathy's surgery and in Pittsburgh. And I'm telling you, we got caught in a snow unlike any I had ever seen. And we lived in Washington, D.C. for several years, but right outside of Washington in we had plenty of snow there, but nothing like what we had in Pittsburgh. It was, like, unbelievable.
Yeah, I think they get more snow than I get here in central Pennsylvania.
Oh, it was absolutely the most snow I believe I have ever seen in my life. Then we were
children love snow so much, and you can see why, but it really is quite a lot of work.
Well, it's a lot of work. It's also so dangerous. I think the older you get, the more you realize how dangerous it is. The people on the highway, especially.
Oh, the way they drive. Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm. I just stay home. I don't move once the snow starts. I don't get
right.
out at all. Yeah.
Well, we were going to read a few prayers here tonight. I don't know how you feel about that. That sounds like something we could at least try to do. I will get to that in 1 second. My dog is a little sick, so I'm going to give him a little something to eat. No, he doesn't want it. Okay, so I'm moving right along.
Will he drink water, Kate?
He's drinking, he's eating, he goes outside, he does his stuff.
Okay.
And he's better right now, so.
That's good. I don't hear him.
Yeah, he's not coughing right now. I think he's getting better.
Good. Good. Maybe he just had a rough day or two.
Yeah. And then he'll forget all about it and he'll become a puppy again.
Oh.
Just in time for his 13th birthday next Sunday. So.
My goodness. He is just right at the same age as ours.
Oh, that's adorable.
Mm-hmm. Just
Hogan.
About the same. Yeah.
Logan.
Hogan. Actually, we thought Hogan was a boy, and then we found out he was a girl. He was named Valerie Hogan for Ben Hogan's wife. So officially, she is Valerie Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
But she has a sexual identity problem because we stay confused about whether she's a boy or a girl. But she is definitely a girl. And she is Valerie Hogan.
I love it. That's a sweet name.
Oh, she's wonderful. There's nothing like those goldens. They are the most loving animals. They were sent to teach us what love is all about.
Right. Well, my veterinarian told me today that he actually went hunting for pheasant with a golden lab who had a tumor just like Mukunda does, which was the size of a watermelon, and he was still running around. So Mookie's isn't even that size at all. So I think he'll probably have some rough spots, but he's going to probably be around for a little while, I think.
You should see our Jessica, our granddaughter, received a guinea pig from Santa.
Oh,
my goodness.
I want to hear about that. How did that go?
Cuddles Lily constantly. Just absolutely adores her. And just holds her and loves on her. And oh, just delightful. Precious to watch. It really
Wow,
is.
It was meant to be, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. They are just, I mean, she just cannot wait. The other night she has a little brother, and she was on her way home from a spend-the-night party, and she said, Joan, do you think my brother took good care of Lily? I'm sure he did. I was not there, but I'm sure he did. Just really serious about her job as the caretaker, you know. Precious.
Wow. That's Precious. A good lesson to learn.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and there's a lot of responsibility to it, and, you know, her parents are doing a good job of using that so that she's learning the responsibility of caring for a pet.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
precious to watch.
And the whole family loves the little guinea pig,
oh,
Lily.
Oh, yes, goodness. Oh, yes. Lily's the queen of the Congo now, so.
And it was a well-kept secret?
It was a very well-kept secret. Yes. Santa handled that successfully.
Joan, are you able to look at the chat?
I'm looking, but I do not see anybody but the two of us and our guest.
Okay.
And I know Betty is probably trying to get on. But I haven't
Let me know
her.
When you see her in the chat room.
I will.
I'm sort of away from that. I just, in order to read these prayers, I had to get them up on a different computer screen because otherwise, if I tried to read them off the iPhone, I would probably fail miserably. And there's a lot of echoing. Go ahead.
I don't have an echo. It's just you.
Okay. Well, this prayer was written on and actually put up on the blog, and I'm going to change the name of the blog. I just wrote a little note to Alex, and I'm going to just call it the Daily Prayer for Healing.
Yeah.
The prayer was written on the 18th of December, and it says, Dear Goddess, what is it that we want today? Do we operate from a place of weakness or of strength? Do we pause frequently and ask for your love, your compassion, to infuse our etheric bodies with a sense of meaning larger than the universe herself? Do we follow through with what we know to be true? Do we follow through with the gifts of love washing through all of us? Do we stop and receive these gifts? Every single second is an opportunity to begin again. As I watch the ink upon the page, I slow down. I'm thankful for the gifts of prayer, of words, of no words, of the silence between the words. Amen. Om peace. So generally I'll write these prayers at 4, even 3, 4, 5 a.m. in the morning, if I can. But generally that's when I write them, yeah.
I think that's why they're so good, because
yeah.
I still believe you're receiving them. I mean,
yeah.
You know, the silence, the time between the words, the pauses, you know, the whole thing, and certainly the ability to be silent and to listen like that. When the world is still asleep, you cannot write and or pray that way. And I say that way. I think we can pray anytime, but there's a certain quality of prayer that happens only in that kind of silence, I think.
Yeah, communion. and that 3 a.m. in the morning is one of those magic times. And, you know, that's what Wayne Dyer talks about that a lot. He actually did an experiment, and he still might do it, where he gets up at 3 a.m. and he writes or prays or, you know, meditates or writes or whatever he does. And I think that you can tell that that's exactly the way his writing comes through.
Do you think that's kind of like a child who is still connected, a larger percentage of the child is still connected to the soul when they're very, very young, connected
yes.
to the other side. And that time of the night, we are at our most vulnerable.
Yes.
So we are the most childlike, so we return to that spot.
Yeah, and, you know, as a labor and delivery nurse, I see a lot of babies being born at 3 a.m. in the morning, or women going into labor at 3 a.m. in the morning. So 3 a.m. is a magical time for many different sorts of activities, for life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my mother died at 3 a.m. in the morning. And I think a lot of death occurs at that time. Yes, yeah, I forgot about that. I remember.
If that's the time that the world is the most still.
I would not be surprised. It is a magical time. They say there's certain times of the day that are very powerful. 3 a.m. in the morning is one of them. 12 o'clock midnight is another. 3 o'clock in the afternoon and 12 noon. So 12:03, 12:03. Yeah.
Ooh,
so that all makes sense. And that's some, you know, the great masters of India say that those are the times that people should be meditating.
Well,
4 times a day.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, the 3 a.m. thing just makes all kind of sense. Because there's no traffic. You don't live in town. But,
no.
You know, for me, I live right behind the school.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when I'm trying to settle down into the quiet, I'm at 7 to 7:30 in the morning, and I've got the school traffic behind me. You know,
mm-hmm.
But think 3 a.m. with you out in the country is how I have you pictured. Are you out in the country?
Well, we are on a busy road. The house itself is down a 280-foot lane, straight down to an old farmhouse, and then a little bit, maybe another 280, 300 feet down to the river. And the floodplain is across the river. So right around our house, there is really nothing, no neighbors. The house itself, back, say, 100 years, was a horse farm, and it had and there wasn't any other houses around it at all. But so we're only about a quarter mile from downtown Lancaster, but you would not know it at all. We have this incredible influx of wildlife. It's like a wildlife refuge, deer, all the wonderful bird life of the river, and red fox and heron and geese and ducks and all kinds of, and we even saw an eagle go down the river one time. And one time during a particularly wild windstorm, we saw a little bit of a swirling tornado wind going up and down the river. And it was just different things that you see that are just completely magical when living in a place like this. So, I mean, that's why I added the pictures from this river to these prayers, because of it just adds the magic, more magical quality to the prayer, I think.
Yes, definitely. Now, go back again one more time, because I think I missed something in there. So you are not in the country.
Well,
you are near town.
I would say yes and no. Yes, we are very near town, but we are, our house, I have no neighbors. I live right along the Conestoga River, which is a wild, wild place. And then our house, our property borders a wood area, a pretty steep wood area that maybe is about a quarter mile long, and that takes you to a golf course. And then right beyond the golf course is about a 500-acre Lancaster County Park, which has all of the wildlife there that comes through our place. So when I take the dogs for a walk in the park, it's almost like I'm saying hi to all the wildlife that I've seen walking through my yard.
Yes, okay. That
helps.
Can
you picture that? Yeah.
So the town is small.
The town is about, has always been about 45,000 people.
Oh, so not very small.
No, and then it is the oldest inland town in the whole United States, so it's old. And then when I was growing up, it was just farmland, and then the Amish have always been we're very famous for the Amish. But now there's a lot of suburbs, and I think that's the way it's true all across America, where at one point you had cities and just large expanses of rural areas, but now that rural areas have pretty much diminished, and we have a tremendous amount of suburbia, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I was watching something on educational TV the other night about the scenes that are disappearing from the country. And this guy's a photographer, and he travels around taking pictures of old stores and old country scenes that are mm-hmm. that are going away. That is a treasure, and your land is a treasure. It really
is.
Yes,
it is. Yes.
But you know all the old stores and the old filling stations and the, you know, everybody knows your name kind of places, just don't exist like they did for most of them.
I am a native of Lancaster here, Pennsylvania, Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And because of that, I even though the place has grown and there's a lot of people coming in from other places, it's amazing how fast word travels about anything. I mean, it's still a small town. I can't explain it, but I don't know how it works. But you can't really keep a secret, even in this town of 45,000 people.
So you're about the same size we are. And,
oh, really?
And, yeah. And this is my husband's home.
Mm-hmm.
He grew up here. And we go somewhere. He knows somebody. I've only been here 30 years, so I'm still new. You know? But he always knows somebody. Always. No matter where. We went to have the car detailed today, and, you know, he ran into two or three people and knew that right there.
Oh, that's your sweet soul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just that big time.
And then, of course, Pendleton. I am so excited about going there.
Oh, that's going to be, that's an entirely different experience, because Pendleton is truly a small town.
They have not changed either, have they?
Not a lot.
Oh, they think they have, though.
They think they have, yes, but they've done a beautiful job of holding on to all of the historic. Now, Rock Hill does a good job of that, too. We do, but not to the point that a town like Pendleton would do, where they truly treasure, I think, their historical. But see, Pendleton was the town where, when in the olden days, they say, Charleston was the big hubbub in South Carolina. But the folks that lived in Charleston in the summertime would come up and stay in Pendleton.
I see.
Because we were up near the mountains and it was cooler. So they left the coast and came up to Pendleton. So you have that air of sophisticated rural, all in one breath,
mm-hmm.
almost. It's a real interesting combination, historical, rural, and sophisticated all at the same time. It's
right.
Real, and it's fun. It is fun, and we grew up there, and I never thought much about it. We just grew up there. But it's a beautiful little town. It's a real pretty little town.
I almost feel like Pendleton is a member of Squidoo.
I know. It does feel that way. I mean, that's Nancy's done that. She's done a beautiful job.
Yeah, single-handedly. Oh, she has.
She has done a beautiful job promoting Pendleton on Squidoo, and she has a big, big following from the Pendleton folks on Squidoo. She has educated Pendleton about Squidoo. That's real interesting. But, yeah, it's a pretty little town, and there are pretty little towns like that all over the country, and those are the treasures, the places that are not quite... are not fully developed, like your piece of land there on the river. You know,
mm-hmm.
I love progress, but we need to hold on to some of those.
Oh, I think so, too.
We just need to be careful not to overdevelop, I think, because we would go after church. We would go out. Friends had a farm, and we would go out there. It was, you know, the thing to do, you know, to go home with them after church and go out on the farm and swim in the lake and all of those things, you know, that kids did in those days. And we're losing some of that, I think. I doubt if I started to say my grandchildren have never been swimming in the lake, but that's not true. They have. But we did it, you know. That's where
just
you went.
You did that every day, probably.
Well, not every day, but that's where you went if you went swimming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, you went
to
the lake.
Yeah, you didn't go to a swimming pool.
Mm-mm. There was one in Clemson at the YMCA. I remember that one. But for the most part, we were in the lake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but anyway, life moves on. But yes, these locations are precious. And the scene for prayer, really, they are. Are you going to read us another one?
I just saw the bullfrog one.
Yeah, do that.
I just saw it here. Dear goddess, now it's not moving for me. Our bullfrog, who lives in the basement, is now in hibernation. He is deep down in his pool of water, entranced and still, quiet in this darkest moment before the returning light. Our bullfrog promises us that springtime is still just a thought, but we know this thought will manifest into a beautiful array of bright greens and rainbow flowers in just a few short months. This is the inevitable process, the first day of winter and the returning sun, the first day of summer and the light cycles shorten. What a magnificent irony bestowed on us, the great cosmic mystery, the rhythm of the seasons, the lunar expansion and contraction, the tides and fertility of new life, no matter what the time of year. The bullfrog thanks the angels today for his slumbering peace. Om peace. Amen.
I love that. And that's the divine order that you and I have talked about so many times on this show.
Divine order, yes.
Divine order. It just is. And we see it again and again and again in nature. And the lesson is right there for us, and it just takes us a while to get it. But there is a divine order to the universe. and all is well.
And all is well.
Right.
It's great.
Yeah, I love that. I love your bullfrog. I think that's precious.
Yeah, he is slumbering.
He is slumbering.
Silently. Yes,
he is
slumbering
doing what
silently. Yeah,
he is being who he is.
Yeah.
See, that's the trick. Because I think so many times we try to swim up the river rather than be who we are. And become. I sent you the note I think that I received from a friend of ours about your brother's presentation of the Christmas Carol on this show.
Yeah.
But and the more I thought about that, the more I thought he is. He is taking his gift and becoming it almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that that's why he's so successful. He not only performs it, he is it. Because he knows it so well.
Yes.
Right?
I think that's so true.
Yeah. And so when we follow our gifts and we live in divine order and stay in the flow, then life is so simple.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of us scrapping all the time to get somewhere else. We're learning how to be. I have a pastor friend that talks about the tension between becoming and being. Yeah, they're both there, and there is a balance to that. And knowing
they're somehow related.
Yes, they are. And how to be. How to simply be. He says being and doing. Yes, the balance.
Yeah, I like that.
Being,
that's fun.
Being
yeah.
and doing. But we do have to know how to, quote unquote, be. To go with the flow. To be in the flow, to be like the frog, and be. I know I've said this on this show before too, but it's worth repeating. Grandson was in kindergarten last year,
mm-hmm.
and he came home talking about time to be, and I, you know how you can't figure out what the little ones are talking about half the time, and finally I understood that they have a time at school when they take a break and they lay down on their little mats. And
oh,
it's called
adorable.
Time to be. It's a time just to be.
Well, that teacher is brilliant.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I just loved it.
That is so cool.
And you can't dare call it nap time. You know, when they're 5 years old, they're too old for that. But you can say it's just a time to be. To be quiet.
Yeah, you can get them to do that.
Mm-hmm. Just a time to be. And they say it like it's one word, you know.
To be.
Time to be. Yeah, time to be. So it takes a while to pick it up. But I thought, what a beautiful thing to be teaching these children. The value of being still a minute.
Oh, yes.
And just
I love that.
Mm-hmm. That's dear. And certainly Mr. Frog knows that. I mean, he's not frantically rushing around. He's being who he is.
Yes. These animals are all like that, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The little guinea pig.
Mm-hmm. And so we learn from them if we'll just pay attention.
Yeah.
All of nature.
Well, I think...
Learn
I think
from.
They are our greatest teachers, really,
mm-hmm.
especially when it just comes to the simple act of love.
Oh, yes. They love unconditionally. You know, the
yeah.
dogs especially, goodness knows, they just love no matter what. They just love. But and I think that's how 2020 teaches us so much, too.
Oh,
with
yeah.
The whole the Indian folklore type of spiritual guidance that he knows so well and shares so well with us, and he's on, in a couple of weeks. But
Right.
He does such a beautiful job of sharing that, and very much of that spirituality is based on nature.
Yes, it is. That's why he likes these prayers that we're reading tonight, because he got it right away that there was something about, there was something special about blending nature in with these prayers that he resonated with. So
we had a pastor when we were little children, and we grew up in the church and active, but the minister would come and pick up the children after school and pile us all in the back of a pickup truck, which you couldn't do in this day and age. We'd have to have seat belts, but back then we all jumped in the back of the pickup truck, and he would take us out to a wooded area. We thought we were going somewhere. As a matter of fact, it wasn't 3 miles from town, but we thought we were going somewhere far away. And we would tromp through the woods, and he would explain things to us, you know. Now, he didn't sit down and say, okay, folks, there's a spiritual connection here.
Mm-hmm.
The lesson was in the teaching us to respect nature and to learn about it and whatever. And as an adult, I really began to understand and appreciate what he was doing. He was really right on target.
He was taking you out to be.
To be.
Not
and we
to
learned.
Do.
And we
yeah.
learned. Yeah, we learned. That's why I would love to hear John sitting on the show one night talking about that, because he was in that same group of kids, and we all have a respect for, love for nature.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he gave us that.
So John certainly does too, doesn't he?
Yeah. And see, John was very involved in scouting and all of that with Mr. D at that point in our life. So he got a double dose of all of that. That we girls were not privy to all of it. But yeah, and such a gift to give a group of kids. I mean, my goodness. You know, we were ranged in age from, I don't think you could go on those runs until you were fourth grade, but fourth graders to seventh graders, you know, wide range of ages. Don't you know we were loud and rowdy and whatever after school? But he was just delightful, a brilliant man, loved the woods. And he would identify leaves and, you know, identify trees. When he died, I told John what I would like to do in his honor is go down there beyond the cemetery and label all of those trees, so that the children that come along would know that the trees have names. They're not all just trees. You know, they're different.
Mm-hmm. And so he taught you different tree types.
Mm-hmm. Names of trees, you know. Yeah. And the
leaves. Did you ever come across the longleaf pine by any chance?
Probably did. I don't even remember. I'm sure we probably did. But I don't remember names even at that. I just remember looking at leaves. And knowing this leaf came from this tree and this leaf came from this tree, and tracks, and, you know, what kind of animal made this track. And
who
is it, Bev, that's writing the blog about tracks?
Oh, that is so wonderful, that blog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes,
I read that stuff, and I really don't even know what to say. It's so magnificent. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. There's a lot of good lessons out there.
Well, Krabby's Beach is just a tremendous place, isn't it? Oh, my gosh.
There's a lot of wisdom there, you know?
Yes. Krabby's Beach is a communal blog site, I like to say.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, I love what Mimi's doing with the simplicity, the, you know.
Minimalist. Yeah.
That's an important lesson, too. There's a lot of important lessons going on out there.
Yes.
A lot of wisdom. Shared wisdom. I just enjoy it so much. And then John has started to write, and that's fabulous too. Because I was tickled to death to see he had started a blog. I said, yes.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Mhm. Because we have so much we can learn from him, and you know, and I hate to keep talking about my age, but I am a senior, and I am at the age where you start to think, wow, what are the important lessons I've learned here, and what are the ones that are worth passing on, you know?
Yeah.
And that's our job, is to be sure that we pass along the lessons that have had particular meaning to us.
Right. Because you start thinking in terms of moving on.
Right.
Out of this dimension.
Without being morbid, and I don't believe in being morbid, I am very realistic. So.
Yeah.
And that's just a fact of life, and it's all about life cycle. And making sure that my children and my grandchildren understand what I found of value on my trip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was meaningful to me, and leaving that with them.
Yes.
You know, you need to know this. You need to, you know. And suddenly I'm in this place of just wanting to pour out all this information. And, of course, right now, you know, they're going, yeah, Mom. That's why we write. Because all of that has more value when we write it down and we're gone. You know.
Yes.
I found,
and put it up on the internet like that, like we do, it makes it almost immortal.
Right. I found a letter the other day from my mom, and we cleaned out an old trunk, and I just sat in there and giggled. You know, because you do treasure the moments, you treasure the words and the phrasing and the, you know, all of that when they're gone. And I thought, oh dear, what are children going to find that I've written like that? You know? What? And hers was just typical, you know, typical mama chat to a daughter, you know, but.
Mm-hmm.
A treasure.
Yes. I need to burn my journals before it's too long.
Yeah.
I do.
You do that?
Yeah.
Do you do that as a sacrament almost?
I will. When the time comes, I will. There's
yeah.
no sense in keeping something like those things around.
No. No. And in fact, that's, that's one thing I did some years back. I destroyed a whole lot of that kind of thing. It doesn't need to be left behind. And yet, there are things that we have learned and written about that need to be shared and told. And
I think we can glean the lessons from that stuff, but nobody could really understand. You know, and
no.
a lot of it is useful bullshit. And and it just needs to go. I mean, I think that this is just an aside. There's just been a lot of conversation lately. I was speaking about it with some nurses the other evening, and we had some personal experiences. And also, I think we all tend to hoard. You know, that show, there's a reality show called Hoarding, I think.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Where they're going in and finding just the most terrible situations. And it's a psychiatric illness, apparently, where people, we all tend to hold on to certain things that we don't need, like those journals. I really don't need them. So in light of this, just these conversations about hoarding, I think I can look at some of the papers I have lying around. I mean, I got rid of a lot of paper, but I think I could probably get rid of a lot more of things I just don't ever think I'll read again.
Well, the declutter queen is trying to get through on the telephone.
Who?
The queen of decluttering, Miss Betty, is trying to get in.
Oh, okay, I'll go get her.
And you're not seeing her, so, but...
No, I'll go get her, yes.
Okay.
Oh, is she a great declutterer?
Well, she is, actually, she holds on to more than I do, but, and I'm bad, but Betty taught a course called Pitch, Pass, and Possess.
Ah.
It's about how to decide what to keep and what to release and all of that. So, yeah. And that's part of our walk, too. And I'm going to go back and say this, too. When we're journaling our experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not of value, maybe, to anybody else. But the lesson does have value. You know? So you don't throw away the baby with the bathwater, in other words. You want to write down the...
She's not 706, is she?
Yeah.
She is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is she still
Hello.
There?
Hello, Kate. Hey, Joan.
Love hearing you.
I had a time getting in. I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but I'm still learning. So how are you?
Great. We are discussing some wonderful things here. We didn't think we could do it, but we're doing it. So.
Oh, you're great. You're great. In fact, I was laughing. I'm turned off and that chimed in right as you were talking about me. So
Yeah, because we were talking about decluttering, and I don't know how we got there from where we were. We were talking about burning journals and how, you know, the journals need to be burned, but the lessons don't need to be burned. And
exactly.
And that there are things that we need to keep and things we need to release.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard to make up your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Kate, the funniest thing is, yes, I am definitely the queen of decluttering, or queen of clutter, probably. But I really have a hard time letting go. And I can teach the course, which I've done, on how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But doing your own things is really difficult, you know. For me, it's really difficult. Joan's better at pitching than I am. I don't pitch well. So.
And what is the name of the course again? Pitch?
Pitch, Pass, or Possess.
Uh-huh.
And so you know, you rationally make a choice. Are you going to pitch this, trash it, totally no salvaging, pass it on,
mm-hmm.
give it to someone else, give it to a family member, whatever. Are you going to possess it? And in that possession, it becomes something that possesses you. It's taking up your space. You know, you've got to really think about the possessing from both sides.
Yeah.
So, but I continue to possess much more than I should, but most of which is worth nothing to anybody but me, you know. But
I know that family picture albums have to be kept.
Oh yeah.
And I need to pass them on to. I have three beautiful nieces who need to. And I have to talk to them about it, but I just can't give them to one niece. I just need to give them to all of them so that they can decide what they want to do with those pictures.
Well,
span generations, and oh, my gosh.
Go ahead and identify them and date them and use an archival pen on the back so
mm-hmm.
that they'll know who these people are.
Yeah, that helps.
I have albums of family pictures who, and we have no idea who they are. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm taking them to reunions. Nobody knows. And it's
mm-hmm.
sad because they are part of the heritage, part of history, you know, so on. But I made a couple of notes while I was listening. Your prayers are so beautiful, Kate, and I just love seeing them and reading them and thinking through them with you. So thank you for sharing all of that.
Well, thank you very much for saying that. I appreciate it.
Those are personal thoughts, too, that you are sharing. But they touch other people, and that's
mm-hmm.
the important thing. They inspire or they help me to stop and think. Don't they, you, Joan?
Yeah, that's what you're doing, really. Because, and I still think, and you wake up that time of the morning, too.
Oh, yeah, Kate and I are on the same schedule.
Yeah, I think
hour
is just, there is a connection, and I'm not saying it clearly, but I think at 3 a.m. you are more connected to the divine in a way that you're not at 12 noon.
Right.
Because it's quiet, because
yes.
the world is still asleep, because the animals are all asleep. It's a quiet time in the universe. And so you are in a place of oneness. There's the word I want. Of connectedness that you're not at later times in the day.
Kate, one of my special moments every day is driving to work, and that is when I have my, what I call just family prayers, basically, family and friends. But I don't drive far to work. But nobody else is on the road, and I live right in town. And but that even, Joan, as you said, is quiet time, and I can talk out loud. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody in the car next to me is looking at me like I'm crazy. And it is, it's, you know, the world's asleep time. And that's at 5:15 or so, 5:10 in the morning. And even then, it's still my time. It's, you know, it's a solitude moment.
Well, then, more people would look. I think driving in general could be more viewed that way. I mean, if you're stuck in traffic, you can take that time to reflect and just relax and even meditate a little bit, as opposed to what some people do, which is have a conniption.
Right, road rage. Well, I do that even in grocery store lines, where you have, you know, you're there and you're in a hurry, and you've either got to, okay, take a deep breath and roll with the flow, go with the flow, and you'll eventually get there and get checked out and get on your way home. Or, you know, and those quiet moments give you time to think, you know, and particularly to be very thankful. So.
Absolutely. That's a prayer in itself, is gratitude.
Yes. Absolutely. Joan, I loved hearing more about the guinea pig. That is so funny.
That's wonderful.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, you know, the love just shines from both of them, you know. It's just neat to watch. Almost palpable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, neat.
That is, the pet experience is important.
It is important. Mm-hmm. It is an important thing. And, of course, they've enjoyed the dogs over here, and they know to appreciate and not mistreat and all of those things. But still, to have one of her very own, the guinea pig is just a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful, and she's doing the feeding, and she helps Mommy feed the cage and clean the cage. I don't think she's quite done that by herself yet, but they do that together, and, you know.
And then there's always the lessons. The lessons at the end of their tiny little lives, like the lessons, you know, these animals do teach us a lot about love, and they, as you say, the children are learning a lot about responsibility and taking care of them. But then when they die, it's a great lesson in letting go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of, you know, this latest thing I wrote, the prayer for January the 5th, has a lot of interesting comments on that particular. Have you read some of those comments?
No, I didn't. I think I was probably the first one there this morning, so I need to go back.
Well, let me just say that, let's see. I could read the prayer, but I'm sort of, the computer's too slow and I can't get up to it. But people were
saying. Would you like me to read it?
Let
me see if I can. Wait, let me get there, Kate.
That'd be great. Yeah, it's
link.
Getting.
Give me link.
Oh, that's mukunda22.crabbiesbeach.com. Actually, the computer seems to be working.
I'm there.
/ blogs. Okay.
I think I'm there. Wait 1 second.
Actually, I'm going backwards.
I should have had it up before now.
That's okay.
Yeah, I have it. Would you like me to read?
Yes.
Dear Goddess, today I embrace all the blessings of my life. And even though a challenge may not seem to be a blessing, it always is. My dog, Mukunda, is sick tonight and may be trying to die. I value his valiant effort, his struggle. I thank him for his great service he bestows now and always to me and my family. Embracing death is not the way of our society. Embracing illness is not very popular either. But focusing on the fear of loss clouds the blessing, the joy, the gifts of a life well lived, of service beyond any I have ever known. The highest good for me and Mukunda is to pause and really experience the love he has for me and me for him. Dear angels, take him if his time is up. He is yours, but make sure you leave a place next to him for me when I am born into the infinite love of all that is. Om, peace, amen.
Oh, that's just beautiful, isn't it?
Oh, I just loved it because to me, you're right. You're so right and you're so on target. And to spend his last hours, days, whatever he has, and that might be another year. He's bouncing back again, isn't he?
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But to spend that time celebrating that love and the joyfulness of who he is and what he's brought to your life is what it's all about, Kate. You know?
This is what I'm saying, that these animals can teach us that, too, because even though it's, people are really very upset when it comes to the death of an animal. And, of course, you know, there's a lot of joy, but the beautiful thing about my backyard is that I can cry and I can even scream and nobody will hear me. So as you were saying, driving along, Betty, about that. And the thing is that there's so much, the joy and the sadness are wrapped up into one. And there's so many interesting comments here. I really like what everybody said.
Mm-hmm. I'm reading as we're talking, yes.
Yeah, it's just really interesting to read.
But when we are in grief, ooh, I like that. Grief is an expression of holy love. Who says
that's my
this?
Brother. My brother said that.
Bless
that's
him.
What I'm, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Grief is holy, yeah.
Grief is holy, and when we are there, and there again, and you and I have talked often about our brother's death, but at that time, I was suffering the most that I ever had in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But I was the most spiritually connected I think I've ever been before or since.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a connectedness there at that joining, at that spot between life and death, that is so holy that when we're in it and we are walking that close to it, it is bound to draw us closer to the divine, to God, to holiness. It just does, by virtue of what it is, whether it be the death of an animal, the death of a friend, the death of a relative. Grief does that. I love these notes. They're just gorgeous. All the sorrow, this is Dee Dee again, all the sorrow in the world is realized when a beloved pet passes on. And I think you can rephrase that. All the sorrow in the world is realized when a beloved pet, friend, neighbor, relative, anyone that we love, passes on. Yet we are joined in tears. We are also joined in love. Sorrow.
That's nice too.
Sometimes sorrow is the greatest expression of love. Therefore, sorrow is holy. Grief is holy. And embrace it, whether it comes today or later. Let it wash you clean. He is. Ooh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, I really think so. Wow.
Wow. I mean, that's powerful stuff. What's your age difference?
10 years. So,
he's older or younger?
He is older. So, he's almost 70 and I'm almost 60, except that I'm almost 59 and he's almost 69.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Because I'm wondering if you can read that and see it without being... I don't want you to see him reading it. I want you to see it like it's somebody else.
Is yeah.
I mean, it's just extremely wise. That's a powerful, powerful paragraph. I know when Betty writes something and it's beautiful, then I'm touched because she writes it.
Yes.
But I want to experience it like I don't know who it is. You know what I mean?
I think that is a beautiful idea. And as a matter of fact, it's easy to do with that because there's no picture there.
Right.
Just
see, I didn't realize who it was. Mm-hmm. When I didn't look at who it is. I just was looking. But, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of wisdom in that paragraph.
So I'm pretty happy that people responded the way they did. I think that it teaches us all to look at death differently, you know. Instead of being the biggest tragedy in the world, it really is one of the greatest blessings, even though we're going to suffer. We will suffer.
Well, you know, our dad always said, and we heard it a million and trillion times, death's a part of life.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he said that as far back. Can't you remember that, Daddy?
Oh, yeah.
I can remember that, like, I can almost hear him saying it. Not that he didn't grieve. I'm not saying that at all.
No.
But that, and not that he was fatalistic. I'm not saying that. It's just that we're back to that cycle again that you and I were talking about earlier. But it's all about circle of life. You know, it's all of the cycle of living. And death is a part of that. That whole cycle. That life cycle thing. And the pet speaks of that.
Is the circle of life the song we're going to be singing in Pendleton?
Yeah. And it's also the one, you know, the whole Lion King thing. And I, you know, I love Lion King, but, you know, the generations come and go, you know.
Yeah.
We all come here. We all learn our lessons. We all pass along certain lessons. And And when we leave, what's left is our love, which is exactly what you're saying here.
What, Kate, if I will remember, which I doubt because my car will be packed, I'll bring you a copy of the book I'm trying to get published.
Oh.
I've written a children's book about death. And,
oh, that's wonderful.
So I'll share it with you at the reunion, along with lots of other things. You're going to have a packed...
Oh, dear mercy.
A few days.
You better bring an empty suitcase.
Oh, me.
I can hardly wait. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, it's going to be such fun. I've been working on it this weekend. Joan, I have more emails and responses and stuff. So we're trying to get organized. But
Are you on the organizational committee?
Betty is the official Dino. You know what a Dino is?
A Dino, no.
A Dino is the director in name only.
Which means I can't tell them what to do. That's what they're trying to tell me. But I'm going to do it anyway. I mean, I always do, you know. But anyway, everybody else does all the work. All I do is pull it together on paper. But
not true.
Uh-oh, I hear your baby.
Oh, poor baby.
He's not suffering as much as... Of course, now he's following me around.
I'm going to get off the line, but I just had to say hello and thank you for your prayers every day and let you know I'm with you, even though I can't get on here. My little name isn't here or anything, but I'll learn how to do all this one of these days. So
well,
it's great to talk with you.
We're very happy you called in, Betty. Thank you, thank you, and love you.
Love you, dear. Bye. Bye, Joan.
Good night. Love you.
Bye-bye. Well, Joan,
yeah.
Believe it or not, we've reached the end of this program.
And we've covered every subject in the book, I think.
Yeah. It was really, truly fun. I think reading these prayers is a good thing.
Yes, it is.
It worked out beautifully, yeah.
Yes.
So I'll just keep writing them.
Yes, by all means. You cannot stop. You're being given them.
Yeah.
So you must share them.
Yeah, I have a feeling you could write a few wing dingers yourself.
Yeah. May do that once upon a time. At some point. When the time, I did that at one point in my life. But
I'm sure.
Yeah. And it's, you know, when you're receiving them like that, you need to share them. That's wonderful.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Except it's a gift that it is.
It is. It's a tremendous gift, and I found it informs the way I live my life because I am not as prone to pessimism. Not that I ever really was a pessimist, but I don't seem to leap into a radical pessimistic way of looking at life as a result of writing these prayers.
Yeah. Yeah, because it starts you off that way.
Yeah.
In the day.
It's a good way to, oh, yeah, you know, it's a good way to start the day, and it's a good thing to reflect on as the day goes on.
Yeah.
Okay, my dear,
for
so
sure.
I'm going to be playing the music for Mother and Child by Klaus D. Jensen and Henrik Abou. I forget his last name. I have to look that up, but we will be playing that and closing down for the evening.
And good night. Enjoyed it.
Good night. Thank you very much.